Okay, I have been formulating Congress and Special Associate Dean at Fordham University, graduate school of social service, New York City, which is left of it. I've been really interested in immigrants for many, many years. I started, before I went into academia, I started as a practitioner in mental health clinic working with many Latinos, and that's when I first became interested, and then I went into academia, and I've continued my work with immigrants. I have no fiscal or financial relationships to disclose. So my husband's here helping me pass out then. So the goal of this presentation is really to increase public health, social work, and understanding of potential health risk and protective factors of immigrants and their families. First, through some demographics, and I feel like you all know all of this. I know you're a very educated, sophisticated audience, but just in terms of the number of migrants all over the world, often migrants move from developing countries to developed countries, and the United States, compared to many other countries, has the largest number of foreign-born. If you kind of just ask someone who's not immersed in our field, are immigrants healthy? The common belief is that they're not that healthy, either physically, or mentally, because they come from developing countries. There may be food shortages. They haven't had a history of health care and prevention where they came from. And then what happens here? They have limited access to health care. Not to mention all the mental behavioral stresses on immigrants, what it means to leave your home and your family, and also what it means to have survived a war or kind of lived through torture, or having your home destroyed. I mean, I could just imagine what many people thinking in the United States are thinking about my home and where I come from, what it's going to be like, kind of going back there where there's so many people have homeless, but at least in the United States there are maybe more resources. But just think of what many immigrants have come from. Now, I've always been very interested, and I don't know if you've heard of Lee Drachman, a social work educator in the University of Connecticut, and this is one of her more recent articles, which she's written for a long time ago, and she says, so I really understand immigrants, you can't just think in terms of the current situation of the immigrant before you. You have to think in terms of these three stages. What it was like before they came, what their experience was like, what it was like in relocating, and thirdly, what it's like now. And taking this, I've developed a new model, which I really haven't done this research on. I'm really just starting to check it out, and I call it the chat model. It's really going to have, just to find a little saying, it's really going to have too much to do with chat, but as the cultural health assessment tool. Some years ago, you may have heard of my culture gram. Ever heard of my culture gram? I did this family assessment tool looking at 10 aspects of a family to help in understanding the family. And a big aspect was health. But this is kind of a takeoff from that, and it really focuses on health. First, I mean, using Tim Drachman's theory, you look in terms of pre-immigrant situation. I mean, what health challenges did immigrants encounter before they were immigrants? Water shortages, economic, disease, malnutrition, traumatic experiences. Then also, I mean, transit experience, what was it like for them? And for many, it's much more complicated, especially for immigrants we have in this country from Mexico or from South America, Central America. It's much more complicated than just getting on a plane and traveling here. And then the current situation, what is it like for someone here? And something I've always been very struck by is how many immigrants come from like a real southern place, a real warm, you know, a warmer place, and what it's like to move to a cold climate. I was very aware of this. I was asked a couple of years ago to go up to Manchester, New Hampshire, and they have many refugees from Somalia. So the coldest day in Somalia is 58 degrees. That's almost the warmest day, you know, in Manchester, New Hampshire. So just the whole issue of moving to colder climate. Also, health conditions of work and lack of access to health care, especially for undocumented immigrants. So this is so the cultural health assessment tool is really based on these three factors. Again, I've talked about some of the health issues and it's real, that's very, very upsetting. After I looked at that picture when I was putting this together, I couldn't eat. But I mean, we have especially refugees who have come from situations like that. And then in terms of mental health, you know, fear, anxiety, depression. What does it mean for them? What health issues, health problems have kind of brought with them? Then I wrote a book on social work with immigrants with a lawyer, you know, who does immigration work, and he's made me, you know, very aware of like about laws apply to immigrants. And I mean, as you may know, there are people with certain diseases are barred from entering the United States, and this is some of the most recent listing of diseases. People with, you know, gonorrhea, leprosy, diphtheria, smallpox. I'm not going to read all the way through this, but I think we have handouts on my PowerPoint. And you want to look more closely at this. And until recently, HIV/AIDS was on this list. However, though that's no longer defined as a communicable disease of great public health significance, so that's changed. So this is to look at kind of the who comes here, and are they maybe healthier to begin with if they don't have any of those serious illnesses that we saw. Also, transit can be very dangerous and very difficult. For some, it's a plane ride. For others, I mean, who come from our southern borders, it can really be very, very life threatening. And I just, a little, some pictures, and I had one too, which is too included to show someone who carried bottles of water crossing the desert. But this is, you know, like a century ago. This is often the way people come out. These are people in a refugee camp waiting to be relocated. Hi, do you want to come in and we can sit? Okay, this also just shows you a little bit about how life is so different before and now. There's a lot of stress associated with that. Now moving to the current situation, we talked a bit about like the pre-situation, we talked a bit about transit, but what is it like now? This is for legal information. For legal immigrants, still limited federal coverage in terms of health care, very difficult for undocumented immigrants. There are special programs in states, and I'm sure probably it exists in California. I know in New York for children to get health care, but it's very difficult for adults who are undocumented. Not to mention the fear of being of people learning of their immigration status. And I mean, of course, as social workers, we're not going to be reporting, but I think a lot of immigrants are really fearful of that. Then there are transportation issues. This is a study in Los Angeles, a little old now, but that a quarter of people never had a medical checkup.
Many employed in dangerous positions. You can see some of these positions. They're more likely to have fatal injuries. Many suffer from respiratory diseases. Also, there are other health risks: physical violence toward immigrants, psychological discrimination and racism. And you could ask, what's mental health like for immigrants here? I mean, is it discrimination, fear of deportation? What about post-traumatic stress disorder related to the experiences that they had in the country of origin? Issues of domestic violence and child abuse. I just in terms of like cultural differences. Up in Manchester, New Hampshire, I learned about a case of a woman sent her children to school one day and really didn't know like English, so really hadn't listened to the radio or the TV that there was going to be a major snowstorm that day. So kids didn't have coats, and there was a big snowstorm. So on the phone with protective services, look at this mother, you know, she's not taking care of the children. So that's an illustration of kind of a cultural, you know, difference in the impact that has on immigrants. Okay, now the healthy immigrant phenomenon, we've heard some really terrific papers about this, and we know kind of what the theory is. I mean, there's a lot of kind of explanations. One explanation is, because I don't think anyone quite mentioned this yet, is that sometimes people who do immigrate are the healthier to begin with. I mean, if you, and in fact, this is sometimes why older people aren't as likely to immigrate. It's more likely like their children who are healthier are the ones that immigrate. But the theory is that, one of the explanations is that when people immigrate, yeah, their diet changes. You know, to an American diet, McDonald's. And also, exercise is limited. I think many immigrants come from rural places. Kids play outside. People walk long distances. But, you know, in the United States, especially in an urban area, and parents are afraid to let their kids outside, not to mention there aren't places for kids to go outside and exercise. There's a lot of concern about safety, especially in poor neighborhoods. Just a little, you know, some pictures. I mean, children play more video games, eat poor diet. Also, I've been very struck by this really changes in diet. I mean, this is a market in Africa. This is, you know, a supermarket in New York City. Or maybe like Dwayne Reed in our drugstore. have something like that. And you can just see the difference. In fact, I read some, you know, somewhere, I was kind of looking for the exact reference and was having been able to find that 90% of what an immigrant from a real developing country would encounter in a supermarket here is just unknown. You know, so first, everything's packaged, right? Number one. Number two, the fruits and vegetables are very different. They look different. And so, I mean, can you imagine some of the stresses with that? Also, I mean, just access, and I think you probably know this and are aware of this, that there aren't really that many supermarkets sometimes in poor neighborhoods. And there's some research to suggest that people are more likely to eat fruits and vegetables if they have access, but there's limited access. This was a street in New York, I think it's a, you know, police car, and you can just see, I mean, what it's like. First of all, liquor store, right? And there was a grocery, but that's all closed, going out of business. Dunkin' Donuts, Popeye, So like a healthy diet. So how does that affect immigrants? And finally, the whole issue of social support, and we had some, and I think your paper is really interesting in this, is, I mean, how is the social support, like, really help? And are there other factors with social support? I mean, we just think naturally someone would be healthy, mentally healthy, if they had social support, but sometimes social supports are not that health producing. For example, like with diabetes, I think maybe part of it is maybe kind of really, nagging the person with diabetes while watching her diet and doing this and that. And anyway, it's more stressful. So there's not convincing evidence, kind of one way or the other. In summary, there may be research studies to suggest that foreign-born people may be in better health than native-born, but however, there are lots of differences. First, among different ethnic groups, there's also some evidence that doesn't always persist. That you can take a measurement at one point in time, but you don't know like how lasting that is. And also, like with social support, we don't we have to really kind of take it apart. It's not and try to avoid just generalizing that it always helps. So these are my references. So that's what I have to tell you today. thank you.
And I do have like maybe a few minutes. As I said earlier, I'm trying to take the last plane, only plane back to New York today rather than canceled. So I'm going to leave in maybe about 5-10 minutes. So let's have an initial discussion. I don't know if the other presenters want to come up. Anyone have any particular questions for any of the presenters?
I have a question. This issue about that immigrants tend to be healthier in terms of health and mental health versus the U.S. born. It's rather complicated. It's not as simple as making these generalizations. I can tell you that in research that has been done looking at nativity, and specifically looking at age of arrival, for example, or cohort effects, it tends to be much more related to that, to those aspects, than the length of stay that immigrants are here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And the other complexity is that if you take a look at, in your case, for example, Latinos and Asians, that heterogeneity of those groups in which there are significant differences, so that we need to qualify the issue of immigrant effect. For example, if we look at mental health in Latinos, whereas the Puerto Ricans, there is no differences between immigrants mostly who were born in the island versus here in the main island in across the board of mental health, severe mental illness. There are significant differences, especially with Mexican American people. Cubans, this depends on the specific disorder. So I think that it's important to really focus on where we are on that process and to try to avoid making,
That's a very good point, Sergio, and I might have said this before you came in. I mean, there were real differences between different Latino groups. And in fact, that's what led me to develop the Culturegram, the family assessment tool, because I realized I started from the practice field. In the morning, I would see a Mexican family who had been in the United States for a week, and in the afternoon, I'd see a Puerto Rican family who were completely bilingual, had been here for 20 years. and they were very, very different. We, you know, both families called Latino. So it's really important, you know, just in terms of understanding, you know, the you know, different ethnic groups.
I totally agree with that. So my research on the association of American health index between, you know, general health and alcohol research between also my colleagues. And I'm just going to honest, we know about, you know, this huge diversity, cultural, social, economic, and whatnot. But as I get into this, I'm astonished how different, I mean, how complex, you know, Asian stories are. I'm just getting into that. So, you know, so I, yes, it's something to be too mindful. Just Asians alone. And
yeah.
I'm pretty sure it happens, you know, with Latinos too, but here Mexican population just dominates in number, right? In number, all the other ethnic groups in the state. So it's a different story for Asians, and it's just so that diverse Asian in Asians.
And sure, and with Asians, there's differences in language. I mean, there certainly are some differences, I think, in dialect, maybe between a Mexican Latino and a Puerto Rican Latino, but nonetheless, there's like a common language of Spanish, but I mean, so some of these Chinese, and some of the Mandarin, and some of the Korean.
But there is socioeconomic diversity that aligns with ethnic differences. I mean, there is Asian American groups that have like a high social standing in terms of education and health, and then there are also Asian American ethnic groups that are the poorest, and you know, so it's really, really very, very complex. The picture is really, really complex.
Yeah, and that's a very good point in terms of something we haven't really mentioned, talked about economic issues, but I think in some ways, you know, most probably done like work and research with like poor, you know, ethnic groups, but there certainly are economic differences that really, you know, impact.
One very quick comment, if I may, with you know, Draxton's framework about the stages of migration. I think that it's good to have those three stages, but I think that if we're talking about the immigration experience, it is important to add a fourth stage, which is, you know, immigrants who return to their place of origin.
Kind of like a transnational.
And after having been here in the U.S., for example, what happens with Mexicans when they go back to Mexico after being here?
And Korea,
happens with Asian Americans.
Yeah, that is a really interesting point. And this is, you know, the often current immigrant experience to return possibly, like at some point, and which is very different from, say, in the 18th century when people came and that was it. I mean, really didn't have much contact, you know, before emails, right? And telephone and cell phone. I mean, really didn't have that much contact with, you know, with people that you left behind.
I want to comment on what I hear about many studies tell us, you know, immigrants and their the healthiest come when immigrants. And I think of a study that Douglas Mason did a while back with Mexico, and he saw that the ones, the immigrants that came from agricultural places where there was lots of unemployment were more likely to immigrate. And the people in Mexico who have higher socioeconomic status and greater access to the business market or whatever were more likely to stay. And it just reminds me that immigration is not, let's not romanticize it. No one wants to leave their country. No one wants to do hard labor in a foreign language and face discrimination and all the other perils. So I think that's something that is often neglected when we think of the immigrant paradox. We think, oh, the greatest and the best are coming. No, not often. So it's very wise of you to think of what was the condition before you came to this country. Why did you come? The social capital and all that. Yeah.
Actually, very strong evidence that those who stay behind, it's in Mexico, tend to be healthier in terms of mental health and some sense of these issues.
So it's another factor that sometimes studies forget in the immigrant.
I think that's very true. It is also concerned, maybe, I don't like immigrants who were, some of the, the most intelligent, the most intelligent. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a lot of evidence of this. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to just kind of switch gears for a second.
Yeah.
I have a question from Mr. Young about this study, and the question I have is kind of nagging me about the question about the nanny part. I wondered if there was any follow-up with, the cohort about really why, they, this question about, getting nagged.
That was the reason that my professor had kind of put forth as we were discussing it. I was actually not there for data collection. I was data after it was collected, so I'm not really quite sure. I could find out that.
Because I believe it's such a complex question, and family is only one person is diabetic. It still impacts the whole family. It means a whole, set of changes that ends up happening in terms of food preparation, even if it's for one person. And if you're insulin dependent or non-insulin dependent, it means a whole lot of different things. And knowing that one person is diabetic, it brings up a lot of questions for the whole family about what diabetes is, and the whole education about diabetes is not just for the one person, but for the whole family to understand what that prospect is. And, that one person who has it becomes the focus of attention. And, so the question is really interesting to me about feeling nagged, if that's the assumption.
And I think it deserves further exploration, because if it's a female-headed household, and it's the mother that has diabetes, with the implications for the household. So, we had a very small sample size, but we
I think that's a very good point. It really is very important in terms of family education, and also in terms of, Maria's work, in terms of photo draft, doing, booklets maybe for other family members to look at in terms of ideas. Okay, I hate to be Cinderella, and disappear, but maybe. But, thank you. I really enjoyed. I want to give you my, I have some materials I'm passing out. But also, my email is congress@fordham.edu. Very simple, just like I said. So please email me and have, continue to talk. I think this is the beginning of our dialogue. And I'm really interested in what you know, and all these papers, and I look forward to reading articles in the journal. So, but don't, you can continue the discussion. Maybe, if you want to kind of moderate it, any other questions, comments?
Other thoughts? Let me just ask, are people in the room, or you're working with immigrants? Yeah, great. Where are you all from? Anyone from New York? Good. When are you getting back?
Tomorrow, my flight was
supposed to be
today.
Right, okay, yeah. I think I'm on the only flight that's going back today.
Maybe I'll be circling until tomorrow. So, people in California too?
Other
places?
Turkey.
Pardon?
Turkey.
Okay.
London.
London. London. Right. And then many immigrants there. In London, right? Okay. Boston. Okay. What are some of the immigrant groups? And I know we're going to go, but. What are some of the immigrant groups in Boston?
Brazilians, I think Brazilians, Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, Haitians. Many New York, if you will. Yeah, Cape Verdeans, Portuguese, Italian. In terms of diversity of the Latino groups, there's more South American.
Other comments or
Are you working in practice? I'm
a sociologist, so I pretty much study a lot of immigration.
How many people are socialists in the crowd? Okay.
I'm a doctor and a PhD in clinical community
psychology. Oh,
in clinical community psychology.
Oh, okay.
But I'm a doctor as well. I'm a physician as well.
Oh, what? Is it that you work in the college? Or?
No, yes, I direct the Center for Abuse and Health Disparities at UC Davis.
Oh, okay. Email me so we can communication. I should have had a little plan. But email me and keep in touch. Today we'll continue to do work and improving immigrant health.
Thanks for that.
Yes.
Are there any more comments or questions?